honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where we'll turn our focus back to World War II next time, but with National Vietnam War Veterans Day coming Tuesday, March 29th, that is our focus today, especially since that day really isn't that well publicized. Make sure you thank the Vietnam veterans in your life this week and help us spread the word. One powerful perspective on what American soldiers really went through during that time period comes from the view of nurses like Loretta Forlaw, who saw with her own eyes a reality that news coverage just couldn't capture.
I stopped reading the newspapers because, one, my parents would send them to me, or my adoptive family would send them to me from Charleston, but they didn't match what I saw with my own eyes. They would talk about Hamburger Hill, and that's not how it happened at all when I was there. And we're like, why do they keep taking that same stupid hill and getting us 100 people blown up? So in that sense, I've always felt that I was a little out of sync with some of my other friends and nurses that were so focused on how difficult it was to do this or that, or how short-staffed we were. I just felt really privileged that I was there. And I don't think I used the word privileged in my head. I just felt I was there taking care of the soldiers that I was there to support. You know, I'd always gone to church. I believed in God when I went there. Didn't have any strong things, but I always sort of felt like I've had guardian angels. So I never really felt like I was going to be hurt. But, you know, we would just have funny things like ball games where, you know, people who had to go home because they got hit in the eye with a ball, you know. I mean, that doesn't sound funny, but they're like, okay, I can't believe this. How am I going to tell anybody I got sent home from Vietnam because I got hit in the eye playing baseball? But we would have things like we had bunkers. And so one time we were under fire, there were rockets coming close, and we all go running into this bunker, and the clothes had been hung by the Mamasan on a line across the whole bunker. There were like 20 lines. So we're all getting tossed over onto the ground as we ran into these clothes in the bunker. And then we would have guys who had too much to drink and they'd step off the bunker. So, you know, we found hope and funniness where we could.
And you mentioned, you know, you were there to take care of these soldiers, and you saw a lot of them. You saw a lot of them in different kind of states that you've described a little bit. What kind of perspective did that give you on the kind of young men who were risking their lives over there?
You know, they were normal. I mean, when they were there, and especially if they were just there for 2 or 3 days for a minor injury that had to be cleaned out so it could heal and that sort of thing, you know, they wanted to know if they could sneak out for a cigarette. They wanted to know if we could sneak in a beer. But they were of good character if we use that word. I mean, no one cussed at us. No one said, oh, I hate being here. Mostly they were concerned about each other. And they were always like, well, did you hear anything about my friends, or do you know if we got attacked last night? So we never really talked that much about what their life was like at home, if they were a religious person or a non-religious person, that sort of thing. You know, we often wrote letters for the few people who stayed a few days and so forth to their parents, especially a couple that didn't make it. We were able to get letters written for them. But they just seemed like normal 19-year-olds and 18-year-olds, and the older sergeants who came in with their heart pain and chest pain, they seemed pretty much like people that were at home because, again, they weren't out in the field. We did have a drug that we used for sleep for a while that was called Nembutal, and suddenly we had this rash of all these people going crazy at night, and that's the only word to use. And then we figured out maybe we don't want to use Nembutal in these kids. Maybe this is not the best medication for them. I don't even know if that's on the market anymore, but it was like one of those weeks where you have this epiphany towards the end of it, and then you don't have to deal with that anymore.
Well, that makes me wonder, too, because, I mean, you're in the Army for 25 years. I should be addressing you as Colonel, I suppose, and have stayed in the nursing profession for all this time and taught so many others and written about it and helped people understand the profession. Are there some things that were done back then when you were in Vietnam that you look back on now and say, boy, I can't believe we did it that way, or I can't believe this was happening?
A lot of what we did are still the basics. One of the things I spent a lot of my career in and was one of the founding members of nurses working with people being fed intravenously through their subclavian vein. That was actually invented. The process of cannulating that vein, which we would later use to save hundreds of people's lives, was developed in Vietnam. But most of the things we are still using regular, you know, doing IVs. We have come a little ways, like with not having to catheterize women, but that's still the same 90% of the places there's someone who's made a great invention now. But honestly, we did such basic care that a lot of it hasn't changed. I mean, recognizing that golden hour changed critical care, the subclavians that we put in there because we needed to get a lot of fluid in really fast. That's why that was not being used regularly, and then suddenly that was recognized and became a standard availability.
When you refer to the golden hour, maybe explain that for people who aren't familiar with it.
It's a very short period of time when the person is still in sort of the stress, and you can get needles into veins, you can get some treatment into them that will mitigate some of the stress response. If you don't do it in that time, then that window, they die because you can't get them a vein or things like that when you're in accident situations and all. You have this window where everything is optimized to help them get well. And if that doesn't happen, if you don't get the right medications in for their blood pressure, or you don't particularly get a vein cannulated, even if they're still stressed and all, the veins are harder to get. And the ability to deliver certain medications in that hour that will impact their heart and kidneys and lungs and so forth. One of the other things that was unique for us in Vietnam was we actually had a prisoner ward. So we had North Vietnamese prisoners. And the reason I bring that up is I don't hear people talk about how they would tell us 15 minutes before some part of the country was going to be blown up. That's how good their intelligence was. And even with being with us, there's clearly planning ahead, because there wasn't really somebody to tell them that, you know, in this prison ward. There really was no new prisoner or things like that. But they would only do it like 15 minutes before. And two of the North Vietnamese prisoners that I took care of on that unit actually had been to Harvard. And I think the other one was a college in Georgia. But they were actually had been educated in the United States, but you know, we're now with North Vietnam. And on four occasions that I remember specifically, they told us that. Unfortunately, we would send them to the ROKs or the Korean soldiers, and they were not happy to go there because probably they didn't leave there. But you know, so it was hard, you know, to take care of them because they're human beings and, you know, they weren't doing anything to us at that time in that environment. But then we knew that, you know, we were not responsible for them and they would go. And that's what we always heard. And I actually know for a fact that two of them, you know, were killed because they're different. I bring that up because I think I wanted to say that sometimes we don't realize how empathetic we are. Like, we took excellent care of them, but other countries or other people are more like, this is war. And if you're going to kill me, I'm going to kill you. And so that does happen in war, that there are people that are much more willing to do unto that person whatever they perceive has been done to their soldiers. While I haven't been in any experiences where we have not been humanitarian, if you will. I've been in helicopters when we shot just to aggravate some people, but, you know, I don't get too upset about that. You know, we didn't kill them. But there were so many times in Vietnam when you just ask yourself, how can anybody be like this? I mean, there would be babies that they would put out crying, and then they would blow people up when they went to take care of them. And I know those soldiers, and I know those are true stories. And you just don't even comprehend when you're there how anybody could do that, you know. So I was always very appreciative that I never saw, and I know there probably were, but I never saw any non-humanitarian responses of war because I wasn't out with somebody shooting at me. You know, for nurses, 90% of my time in the Army was just like if I had worked in any civilian hospitals. You know, the way I ran my floor, the way I did this, the way I educated nurses were all based or shared from us to the civilian community. And so I really felt like that I was just at home in the Army, that it was the place I belonged. I actually got out of the service when I came back from Vietnam because my boss at that time told me I was too independent a person to be successful in the Army. So I went home, and then I met your mom because I came back in the Army and went to Letterman and ended up in the ICU where we were working together.
Well, otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation, so I'm glad that happened. And it sounds like you're glad you went back in the Army.
I was very happy with the Army. I got back out and went in the reserves to get my degree because they didn't want to send me when I wanted to go. But I've always wanted and enjoyed being able to be very blessed by my Army friends and to be very involved with civilian friends. You know, it is funny though, I can tell you, and other Army people will tell you this, or military people, of my two best civilian friends, I would still call your mom first if I needed someplace to spend the night without hesitation. You know, with them, I would say, well, but without hesitation, I'd call your mom or any of my other Army friends, you know, if I needed something.
Yeah, that's something, you know, I haven't mentioned too many times over the years of doing this show that I think maybe once or twice I've said it maybe around Veterans Day that my mom was in the Army for a short time as a nurse, and that's where you two met. So maybe there's something you should tell me about my mom that I don't know, because you knew her before I knew her.
Well, you know this about your mom. She's an amazing nurse. But one time she lifted a chair and the patient fell over. Because she's so tall, you know, yeah. When she did it, perfectly fine, everything was fine, but you know your mother, so she was mortified for weeks, and it was no big deal, the patient laughed, we all loved it, but there's not a lot except wonderful adjectives that you can use for your mother. You know, she's a master seamstress. She tried to teach me to sew. We went through this adventure, and then she goes, maybe this is not your calling. But there's not really much I can tell you about your mom that just wouldn't be that she's an amazing mother, a wonderful person, can spell all sorts of things. But that story was our funny nursing story. We all have one, and that was our funny nursing story with her. And we were, honestly, I mean, it was that, like, we loved it, but as I said, your mom, being the person she is, was not happy.
And that must be why I've never heard that story from her, but now I have. And I'm sure you have a lot of other friendships, like your friendship with my mother, from people you worked with over the years. What do you think is the most important thing that you've drawn from all your experience in the Army?
Independent thought, actually, believe it or not. I know people always say that that doesn't make sense, but you have to, in order to lead people, you have to think, and you have to look at them as whole people. And I think that what I most took from the Army was the importance of individuals in group situations, because that's when we have failures, is when we don't recognize the humanness and the needs and the potential of the individuals within any group. And so the Army, you know, really could solidify that for you. I mean, you see it every day, you live it, and it really helps you recognize that so often a lot of what we call leadership or the things that we want to promote aren't really there. In fact, I just doing some writing about legacy and veterans and leadership, because I think in the civilian community, we don't really recognize when someone leaves the Army, the extent of dependence on each other and yet being an independent being in that situation. And so I think a lot of people feel like, oh, this person's trying to boss me around or things like that, because a lot of times you never had to boss anybody. They just had to do what you said, you know? And so you just kind of have some of those expectations. And I know people talk about that, but I don't think we've had enough discussion. In the Army, I know who the general is. I know about legacy. I live a legacy or within a legacy, but I think the civilian sector, people hunger to leave a legacy, but they don't know how. And then there's part of that transition for the military that I think we need to have them understand how they're transitioning from a fully engaged legacy to now creating their, even more so, their own legacy to go forward. The Army and nursing were the perfect combination for me to see people as individuals and their strength and to see how God has plans for us. And I, so many times I've just sort of watched this evolve with my friends when they don't think God has a plan for them. And whether they, then they go, oh my God, this just worked out perfectly, you know, and you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I just think that it's really important that people not, I always laugh when people talk, oh, didn't you have to just obey orders or didn't you just have to do that? Well, certainly, if I was a young man in combat, trust me, I want people giving me the right orders. But as a nurse, I didn't have those kind of constraints, you know, even though I had some annoyingly bossy bosses and, you know, things like that. And yes, I had to do what they said till they left. But I just feel that people need to recognize the strength of the military. I would tell every young nurse to spend 2 years in the service. If it's not for you, fine. But I, by the time I had been a nurse for 3 months, I could totally run a ward, tell doctors what to do, you know, everything else, that it takes a year sometime to get that level of experience on just a routine nursing floor. The level of discipline and just the freedom and the independence that you have to exhibit, even if you have not the friendliest bosses or situations like that, you are put in situations where you have to make decisions. And so I, from my perspective, think it's a great opportunity for anyone to spend a couple years in the military. I know the military is a little different now, and I'm not very happy with some of the lack of structure, but I see the Army going back that way. 2 years ago, I would have said, maybe I won't be as strong about that. But from a nursing perspective, it hasn't changed. I would still tell every nurse that. But I see the Army going back that way.
Well, and how about the VFW here? Why is this such a passion for you that it sounds like you almost approach it as a full-time job here?
I love this, the people here. They're just amazing. I mean, each one is different. As you saw with Ken and Nancy, they're still collecting cans and earning money so we, because we do Reefs Across America, and we have one veteran who cleans gravestones and makes them beautiful again. They do that. Alice and Lou, you know, they take things out to the VA hospital all the time. Rollin is just our master of making this place much better. So they're all just, as you know from hearing them, amazing people. So I feel really blessed to be able to just have them be part of my life and to engage with them. And the city, Mayor Brian Nelson and others have been supportive of us. I know that I can make a difference here. So I'm always happy when I can use my skills, which are to make things better, I think, and make them work here. And they allow me to do that. Commander Anderson is, as he says, sometimes I really annoy him, but I still show up, so he's happy with that. I want this particular VFW to be the legacy of, we can help other veterans.
Let me also just say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and for introducing me to so many great veterans here in Central Florida.
Well, just thank you for being here. Thank you for being such a wonderful person and taking time and talking with our veterans. And we owe all veterans, and I, you know, even though I'm a veteran, I'm going to say that it's a thank you. And a simple thank you is to make sure that we have what we need. I feel so blessed. Sometimes I felt a little guilty because I didn't suffer from Vietnam. You know, I came back home. I had many great nursing skills. I had met wonderful people, had wonderful, for the most part, experiences. I had a couple of things where I wish they hadn't happened with patients or different things. You know, you see people just die before your eyes and they're not even 20 years old. So I'm sort of a pragmatic person. In fact, people don't usually ever even ask me what I did in Vietnam. If I say I served, they just kind of go, oh, okay, I guess you were happy there or something. Because of that, I don't tend to emote as much about it as I should maybe sometimes. And I want people to recognize that just because some of these young men don't, cry or seem wounded, they are wounded. I think that they're more wounded because we had so much isolation during Afghanistan and Iraq. Not Vietnam, but in Afghanistan and Iraq, I've talked with many of the psychologists about the fact that these young men sat on their computers. It would take 6 weeks for somebody to break up with you in Vietnam, but they could break up with you 2 days after you left home when you're sitting in a room by yourself talking. So it's wonderful for families and all, but I think one thing I would share is that we really need to talk with young people about their experience, and they didn't necessarily have the same camaraderie and support that we think is going on because we've allowed them to isolate themselves when they are in their rooms in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The wounds of a soldier, visible and invisible. Every conflict carries its own nuance, its own patterns, but every one of those generations has contributed to the price of freedom, that freedom that all of us get to enjoy. Again, if you live near me in the Golden State, 9 a.m. Tuesday, March 29th in Clovis, California, at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District, a special commemoration of National Vietnam War Veterans Day with a keynote address from Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan. I might just see you there. And if not, wherever you're listening today, you know what to do. Thank the veterans in your life and encourage others to do the same. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.